Hello and welcome to episode 53 of Spooky Girls, the podcast where we explore all sorts of real-life paranormal and creepy occurrences, from ghost sightings and hauntings to reported alien and cryptid encounters, myths, folklore, legends and more. Every episode we cover a different true spooky story. We're your hosts. I'm Katrina.
And I'm Jasmine. It's good to be back. Sorry again.
Again.
For the delay.
Again.
Life is long and finding time is hard, but we made it. We made it and we're back and it's all good.
I know. Yes. I'm very happy to be back. Very happy.
Me too.
Missed you all.
Me too. Yes. Mm-hmm. How are you? How's the kids? How's the dog? Send our love to Janet. All of the above. But anyway, yes, Katrina, how have you been?
I am all right, thank you. We've had a little addition to our family since we last spoke. Little
yes!
Lily.
Oh, little Lily.
Puppy. She is currently 16 weeks old.
Yes.
And she is a rescue puppy from a wonderful charity called Carla Lane. And so...
Yes.
Give it a lot of support because they take in. I think it was this horrible woman who brought in her mum and another like incredibly heavily pregnant dog because she'd let her son's dog impregnate them and then didn't give them any prenatal care or anything. So it's amazing that she managed to have like healthy puppies. They both did, thankfully. God. Who were then raised by Carla Lane for the first, 10 weeks of their life, and then they found them good homes.
Aww.
And we still have a puppy support chat WhatsApp group where we talk about how evil they are.
They are, although I must say, I think kittens are far more evil. Kittens are just, their claws are something else, and they just hide under the sofa and then they just like scratch your ankles. I love cats, but my God, kittens piss me off.
Well, puppies have like little shark teeth, like they're horrid. Horrid, I can't wait till she loses them. No. But she's gorgeous.
But anyway, kids, adopt, don't shop whenever you can.
Yeah.
As the saying goes.
Well, what about you?
Nothing new with me, really. Just work is working, it's been fun. It's been challenging. I have a couple of days off coming up, which is nice. Just getting into the swing of I say new job, but I've been at this job now for 6 months, but it feels like I've been there just a week. It's been really, really fun. And yeah, nothing to complain about.
Good.
There are worse things to be paid to do than play video games, so I'm not going to complain. But amidst all of that, game malarkey, I have managed to crack out a little episode for you guys. It did take me a while, so I am very sorry about that. But I think the length reflects that.
I'm so excited, though. I don't know what it is. Please tell us. Please tell us.
So, today's episode will be on the trial of Marit Jonsdottir, aka the first to be accused in the Mora witch trials of Sweden.
I've not heard anything about this. I'm so excited.
Well, that's the thing, when everyone thinks witch trial, they think Salem, Massachusetts, but this actually happened decades beforehand over in Sweden.
Yeah, and it was like actually, I think the worst place for it was Germany, if I'm, because I touched upon it like a tiny bit in my research for my master's. So obviously it was in like the 1500s and 1600s in Europe, and then in America, it was just later.
Yeah, because you guys love to borrow our goods. Anyway. I'm kidding.
I know, but I don't think you should be like, ugh, America stole our witch trials, our persecution.
I mean, it's not a bad thing to say. I'm just saying we did it first. But yeah, this was a really, really interesting one to research. Because as you said, Katty, like I've known for a while that there were witch trials in Europe, but I didn't know much about them. So this was illuminating. I was going to do it on the witch trials in general. But then I figured, this poor lady got a lot of shit, and it wasn't even her fault.
It's never their fault, to be honest.
No, it's not, but this is basically how one little boy murdered hundreds of people through one misguided childish comment.
What a little shit.
Honestly.
I think that's kind of the general story of the witch trials, was just one person not liking you and saying that you're a witch. And then you get murdered.
I mean, really, what's changed? But...
But yes, I am so excited. Please tell me and the listeners all about it, Jasmine.
Okay, so this is the trial of Marit Jonsdottir. My sources for this one are Wikipedia, Liquisearch, Patheos.com, and OccultWorld.com.
Ooh.
Also, by the way, if I mispronounce anything, please let me know. I have written it down phonetically in my document, but a few things might have slipped past me, so please do not judge me. I am not Swedish.
I'm sure your pronunciation is beautiful.
It is true. And maybe later on, Katrina and I will tell you guys about the summer that we learned Swedish for no reason.
I'm sure we've already mentioned it, actually.
Well, we're going to mention it again.
Okay.
We've all heard of the Salem witch trials of the 1690s, when a deep fear of the occult gripped Massachusetts and led to the murder of 25 women, all accused of abusing dark magic. But across the Atlantic, over in Sweden, mass hysteria and moral panic over the presumed presence of witches had long plagued the populace. Between 1668 and 1676, did Stora Uvasendet, or the Great Noise, washed over Sweden. Whisperings of devil worshippers swept the country, driving suspicions up within communities and leading to mass executions, with some towns reporting over 70 people executed and burned within a single day, and a total death toll of 280 women and men. The first and most internationally famous of these trials is known as the Mora Witch Trials of 1669, and it all began with a woman named Marit Jonsdottir. In 1667, in the small parish of Elvdalen, a little shepherd boy named Erik Eriksson had had an argument with another child, a small girl named Gertrude Svensdottir. To get back at her, he spitefully claimed to have watched her walk over water to lead stray goats across a field.
What a little shit!
I know. Remember the name, Erik Eriksson. Little piece of crap. He reported this immediately to the town priest, and, after being interrogated by him, Gertrude is said to have been coerced into making the claim that she performed this feat with the help of magic. When quizzed about how she learned this witchcraft, she confessed that she'd learned it from her neighbour's family maid, Marit Jonsdottir, who lived next door to her childhood home in the town of Haljedalen. According to Gertrude, Marit took her for a walk along a dirt road. When they came to a crossing, Marit called out, "The devil, come forward." He appeared to her in the form of a vicar, and the three of them dined together. The following day, Marit returned to Gertrude and covered both her and one of her father's cows in a mysterious red-coloured oil before taking her in her arms and flying away up the chimney to return to see the devil himself in Blockula, a satanic island where Satan and his minions are said to have carried out the witch's Sabbath.
Oh my god, I want to live on Blockula.
I know, it sounds pretty fucking metal. I don't know why there are no death metal bands called Blockula.
Yeah,
that
would be
fucking,
so cool.
It's so cool. And I mean, like, you can also, like, intersperse it into any song that you want. You can call Dragula Blockula.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that.
The back of my Blockula. It works.
It does.
Gertrude maintained that she had been to Blockula many times and carried out numerous satanic rituals, such as dancing with and milking familiars. She also claimed that Marit had taken other children up there to perform unspeakable acts with the devil himself. According to Gertrude, their names had been inscribed in a book with black pages, and it was at Blockula that she learned to spread oil on her feet to walk on water. She seemed all too eager to confess all this to the priest, as an angel had come to her in Blockula and told her to tell of her actions or else the country would be swept by a terrible famine. So began the Mora witch trials, all because of what one little boy said out of childish vengeance. Marit was immediately imprisoned, and seven other women were accused by Gertrude of conspiring with the devil to kidnap and sacrifice children as well. In 1668, Marit stood trial. Despite being pressed to confess her dark alliance, she denied it all. Witnesses were called against her, one of whom, Gertrude's own father, Sven, who claimed that he felt exhausted after being, quote, ridden by Marit on her way to Blockula. This was especially spiteful, given that Marit had long been acting as Gertrude's own mother following the death of Sven's wife. Sven's subsequent aggressive romantic pursuit of Marit ended in defeat when he was badly beaten by another of her suitors, and it was then that Gertrude had been sent to live with her grandmother instead. So, there you go. He literally said, oh yeah, she did it just because she wouldn't shag him.
She rode me on the way to the mystical Satan Island in the sky. Like, sure, bro, whatever.
Well, then he was there as well. Why isn't he being...
I mean, he's a witness, so I guess the idea is, like, he feels exhausted and he says, the only reason, the only thing I can think of for my exhaustion, my inexplicable exhaustion, is that that bitch rode me like a pony up into the sky. What? What were they fucking smoking in Sweden in the 1600s? I beg.
I don't know, but I want some. Please continue.
The court considered a birthmark on Marit's finger to be a sign of her being a witch, calling it the devil's mark. But when pressed about this, all she could admit was that she held a few harmless practices from Swedish folklore. This included reading in salt, a practice whereby she would feed sick cattle some salt that had been moved with the sunlight facing her hand. To convince the court of this, she read aloud a verse. Jesus our Lord travelled the mountains and far. He cured shots and magical shots, shots of water and all that is shot between sky and earth, God's worlds and amen. Shots here pertains to sickness, showing that in her mind she was curing the animals using the same magics used by Jesus. As well as Gertrude, other children spoke out against Marit as well, including her own little siblings, aged 10, 16 and 14 respectively.
Oh no.
The children pled with Marit to admit of her wrongdoings, saying that they had done so and confessed their sins, and they wished for her to do the same. But Marit only responded by asking them questions. If she had truly been to Blockula, then why did she not know about it herself? Why would this be hidden from her? Although initially calm in the face of all these accusations, she was outraged to hear her own siblings speaking out against her. Her little sister claimed before the court that not only did Marit take her to Blockula by riding backwards on a cow, but she saw her big sister having sex with the devil. She then said that she herself was forced to have sex with Satan following her 9th birthday.
So uncomfy.
Her brothers insisted much the same, only that their father, John, had taken them to Blockula instead. They all said the same thing, that there was no way that Marit would ever confess. Marit crossed herself and told her siblings that they had forsaken God with such accusations, warning them that they were headed down a dark and dangerous path. Her family embraced her, begging her, but Marit did no such thing. She would not confess. By the end of Marit's trial alone, 10 people were accused of witchcraft. The accusations then spread among the children, like some sort of sick game, each making up stories to accuse more and more townspeople of conspiring with the devil in witchcraft.
over the course of the great noise that ensued. 23 were imprisoned and 8 executed in relation to the trial of Morit Jonsdottir alone. Swedish law forbade putting to death any criminal who would not confess, and although she was repeatedly goaded, flogged, and harassed to do so, Marit's lack of confession meant that she could not be executed by the state. She held out for 4 years, over which many more were tried, convicted, and found guilty of witchcraft. On April 16, 1672, Swedish Parliament put an end to Marit's efforts. She was declared guilty of sorcery due to all incriminating testimonies, as well as the mark on her finger, and was sentenced to be beheaded and burned for her crimes.
No.
Her mere denial cannot help her, nor free her from her life sentence, proclaimed the state. And with the law forbidding execution without confession having been lifted that same year, Marit's time had run out. She was judged as one of 34 accused witches, with 5 of them found guilty and executed. Marit's younger sister and 2 others were put to death, even after admitting their guilt. But Marit was one of 2 who denied the accusations to the bitter, bitter end. Even after Marit's death, the great noise continued to rattle through Sweden. The hysteria could only be contained when the state demanded priests claim that no more witches were left in the country by 1677. Fear, accusations, and bloodshed. All this death stemmed from the lips of one little boy, and all this death would soon inspire more just decades later in Salem, Massachusetts. So, was there any truth to it? Some awful plot brewed up by the devil to enslave the good people of Sweden? One thing is certain. Marit's story, and the Mora witch trials in general, is a sobering example of how one lie, no matter how outlandish, can have the power to enslave the masses and turn sister against sister, plunging a quiet community into the very same chaos they had hoped to avoid. The end.
Oh, wow, that was so good, Jasmine. So depressing, though.
Very sad. Aww. I mean, like, the hilarity and ridiculousness of Blockula and riding things into the sky aside. It's just, again, you know about all this stuff. Like, you know that people really, really believed in witchcraft, yeah, and they feared it so much. But when you look at the evidence that they gave, it was nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they're going off the back of children.
Just what they say.
Mm, it's horrible.
Awful. Poor Marit.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just, and it's really sad because, like, because they couldn't kill her without her confessing, they basically walked her down to, like, the chopping block a bunch of times and was like, confess, confess. And she's like, no. So they would flog her and send her back into jail. And they did that multiple times over the course of her imprisonment.
So awful.
Yeah. It's just terrible. But the thing that really pissed me off is that little brat Gertrude, she went on to, you know, get married and everything. She was present for quite a few of the trials I guess there wasn't really a jury. I mean, it's not really justice, but I mean, she was there witnessing the trials, and then she died shortly after the death of her own baby. I'm not going to say serves her right, but
no,
let's just say karma a bitch, you know? That's all I'm going to say about that. But she sounded like an absolute cow. And yeah, it's just incredible the things that people will believe when it's sort of whipped about into this kind of intense moral panic and frenzy.
But you see it, like, even so much nowadays, or like the satanic panic or things, like, it's crazy, but the mass human public can just believe the most ridiculous stuff.
Definitely.
And I don't understand it personally. I don't think that I would believe it, but you just never know.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, like, if someone told me, oh, yeah, my neighbors, you know, my neighbor, yeah, that's hi, yeah, wave to her, hi. Yeah, so her nanny took me into the sky and put oil on my feet. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be calling the priest. I'd be calling the doctor. But again, it was a different time, yes. You know. I mean, you're the historian between us, so I'm sure that you have plenty of, you know, plenty of strange things they did back then out of sheer belief.
Yeah, but even then they had people that did say, oh, that's like ridiculous. But they weren't listened to because it sort of, in a weird way, it like strengthened, I'm not going to say morale, but it strengthened like the unity of the community of the people who weren't being accused of witchcraft, because they all came together to hate this one person or to go on this one tirade. And then obviously it always helped those who were in charge, because they weren't the ones being accused of anything. And even if they were, they could like sweep it under the rug.
Well, that's the thing. I think the fact that like this was growing exponentially and even the government was like, we can't control this. Of course, there was no real proof. A bit weird for them just to like lift that law about not executing people when they hadn't confessed. But like once they did that, the deaths were just quick. People were accused and killed in the exact same day. And it got to the point where they're like, we cannot control this mass hysteria. We need the priests to tell people there are no more witches left. Put down your pitchforks. Let's get back to normal. Because without that, they would have just kept going. And that's what's scary, is that like, because it was obviously not true, like obviously, but people had it in their head that they could be anywhere. Like this fear of the unknown, this fear of the other kind of encroaching on their society and infiltrating them was so powerful that all logic was like,
but as I said, like it's still happening nowadays, like people believing propaganda, like what they're believing about the precisely. Other. I remember someone telling me that they knew a girl from Russia and she was like really, really lovely, but she completely believed Russian propaganda. And so she believed that like Americans bought Russian babies to eat and stuff like that. But you know, and like that's a big thing like that's been used against Jews and stuff,
the
like
blood libel
in the medieval period. And even now, like there's a lot of like propaganda in Arab countries that like Jews use blood for their matzah and kill children, and people believe it. And you know, if that's all they've been fed,
precisely,
or in this case, if all they're fed is religion and it can be turned on people to do damage,
definitely. I definitely think that this idea of like the scapegoat is something that is quite prevalent across time, and like you said, it kind of strengthens the bond because it gives you like this us and them divide, and it kind of, in a weird way, it sort of raises morale, like thank God I'm not one of them, thank God I'm normal.
Yeah, and you have someone to blame, because it can be like, oh well, it was clearly Mary and her fault that my baby died, or crops didn't grow, or something. And it's like almost you don't have to blame yourself, or you don't have to. I think people love to have a reason for something,
and if there's not one, they'll make one up.
Yeah. So even if there is no reason for something happening, they would rather think of, oh, there was a negative reason and now we can deal with it because Mary's going to be burnt at the stake.
Yeah.
Even though witches weren't really burnt, they were sort of hung or had their head chopped off.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I think I read about one witch who was burned alive, but all the rest had their head chopped off and then they were burned this specific time. That's what they did. But I mean, there's also definitely something to be said about how all this took place, not in like the major cities, but in like the smaller communities all around Sweden. And how, like, I guess it is that idea of, like you said, when people are being fed this idea and they don't have access to any other kind of education, especially given the time that it was in, it almost makes sense that they're like, oh yes, like from what I've read, it sounds like the priest and the church was their ultimate boss. Like that's who governed everything. It didn't really matter what the government said, because clearly the religious presence was, you know, really gunning for this one thing. And then eventually the government was like, well, we have to give in to it. And even the government had to tell the priests to tell people that there were no more witches because they wouldn't believe the state.
Yeah.
So, like, it's, that's what I found interesting.
Well, yeah, because the local priest was the person that you looked to for answers. And ultimately, it was sort of like the only place that you got entertainment almost, or
news.
Yeah, yeah. It was, he was like your complete moral guidance. Yeah. And small villages probably wouldn't have even had like a, you know, government, like, oh, what were they called?
There was a term in Swedish, but I was like, I'm gonna butcher that. I just know it. So I wrote parliament and state instead.
Yeah, there might have been like a government official or like a sheriff who was the government's presence in a village or something, but they weren't like the ultimate
authority.
Yeah. Power necessarily within that community.
Yeah.
It would have been the religious leaders.
I mean, the thing that it's just eerie because I'm talking about this, and I wrote about this, like, that piece of writing is a few weeks old now, but I'm currently like writing about this game at work, which is kind of like a dark fantasy strategy game called Gord, which is kind of like The Witcher meets The Sims. Ooh. Is how I would describe it. It's really cool, but it's that similar kind of thing where, like, you make a town and they all have their roles, and it's this small area, and everything that they think is based upon, you know, like oh, the gods do this. There's like a natural order of things, and it is just an interesting kind of look into the context of it, because we can look at it now and say, oh God, that was crazy. And it is crazy in hindsight, but I guess at the time that it was happening, it felt very real to them, and this is how they governed themselves.
Yeah, because it'd be like if something went wrong, like, oh God didn't do this to me because I've not done anything wrong, because it must have been the agents of Satan that have done this to me.
It must be that girl who walked on water with oil on her feet. Yes. It all makes sense. Or the man who got ridden like a horse into the sky. I can't. Like,
that game sounded really cool, by the way.
It is. It is very cool. But yeah, that is the story of Dear Marit. So, remember, kids, look out for your neighborhood witches. Be sure to inform the priest. And if you meet a kid called Eric Erickson, kick him in the head for me, won't you?
Drop kick him.
That's for Morit, you piece of shit.
Oh no, Jasmine, I loved that.
Thank you so much.
I hope it was worth the wait, everyone. I know it was, because Jasmine did amazing.
Oh shucks, thank you.
Yeah, I've been thinking of like doing a witch trial episode, like the Pendle witches, or
that's a good one. I think like the thing with the witch trials is that they were all similar in how they began, of course, with the accusations from children, but the ramifications and the time period and the context is all very different. So the Pendle Witch Trials are interesting, though, because I used to live somewhere that was like right nearby the Pendle Witch Trail. I never did go on it, but like it was there.
Ooh. Oh, well, maybe you should do it then.
No. You can do it. No.
So thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back for the next episode. If you want to get in touch for any reason, just to say hello or to send us a story of your own true paranormal or spooky experience, please email us at spookygirlspodcast@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Twitter @spookygirlspod and on Instagram @spookygirlspodcast. If you want to support us further, then you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/spookygirls, and from as little as $2 a month, you gain access to bonus episodes and other awesome content that we have planned for the future. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you all next time. Stay spooky. Goodbye.
Goodbye.